You know what, Jamie? Let's pop off right now. We got to get started.
We got to go.
Let's go. Let's go. Let's get the people in the chat. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from OurSportsDaily.com. I am your host, Greg Flamong, and with me, as always, is Jamie Uwayama, Mr. Jamie University. It is Thursday, January 25th, and we're going to do some rankings today, Jamie. This is our first ranking show, I think, in a really long time. Or maybe it isn't. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm missing a show in there where we did some rankings. But nevertheless, we're doing a ranking show. We're ranking the units on the Notre Dame football team as we head into the offseason and head towards spring ball. We'll do that. These rankings we'll have to revisit this later on because this is going to fluctuate, right, as we get some reports. Some players you hear are doing really well. Some players aren't doing as well as maybe we thought. Maybe some positions a little bit deeper than we thought. But it's a fun exercise to do. To try to kick off the offseason here. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If this is your first time and you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this channel. Please like this show. Please hit the notification bell so you know whenever it is we are going live. If you prefer the audio format on these podcasts, the links to this, our podcast feed are in the description below. Just a couple things on the ISD YouTube channel. Published a podcast with Dara Mabry talking about the women's basketball team. They've got a big game coming up tonight against Syracuse at home, and then they're going to go on the road on Saturday against UConn. Not the greatest scheduling right there, Thursday, Saturday games, and those are going to be night games as well. So that's not great by the schedulers for the ladies, but we're going to want to check that out. So check out our podcast that is on our YouTube channel right now. And then I did a podcast with Tyler Wojak of Locked On Irish. We talked about Marcus Freeman in his first 2 years, kind of how we view how he's doing and where the team's going and things of that nature. So check those things out. Jamie, how are you doing? How's it going today on this wonderful Thursday?
It's going pretty good. My wife just got laser eye surgery, so she can't really see good right now. Well, she will be able to see great, but right now she's in the dark hanging out right now.
She got the LASIK?
She got the LASIK, yeah.
Oh, congratulations. I understand it's one of those instant difference, right? Like you don't have to you can see clearly for the first time ever or something.
Yeah, it's everyone that I know, and I know people who got it like 20 years ago too. So yeah. And then it was a much longer wait time, but everyone I know who's done it, it's worked incredibly well for them. So, especially lately.
Yeah. So good job by her. She's going to be in the dark for a couple of days, so she's going to be in the light for the rest of her life. Oh man, I should do promos for LASIK, Jamie. That was so good. That was so good. Speaking of promos, let's pay some bills here. You can light up your life with new eyesight. And, your wife, Jamie, she's going to see clearly for the first time. You'd love to see you in a bamboo dress shirt from ESQ clothing. You want her to see you in some nice threads, Jamie. So head over to ESQ for their bamboo dress shirt. It's crafted from high quality bamboo fabric, the softest and most comfortable shirt you'll ever put on. Not only more sustainable than cotton, but also feels cooler, has stretch, is odor and wrinkle resistant, even machine washable. You've seen ESQ's one-piece collar bamboo dress shirt on all of Notre Dame's favorite player, all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches, and it's the perfect shirt for today's business meeting or heading for a night out. Use ISD15 and get 15% off all online items. That's ISD15 for 15% off. Just a couple notes, items before we get into it. Gabe Rubio is not with the program in the spring. He has gone home. He's dealing with a personal matter that's been confirmed by pretty much every outlet, including our own. So, Jamie, it sounds like there is an option to come back in the summer. Summer, fall. We don't understand the nature of whatever the personal issue might be. So we don't, I don't want to speculate on how likely it is that he's back or anything like that. We don't really know what's going on there. At least it hasn't been reported. So let's gauge the impact on what this could mean for the defensive line, especially.
I mean, obviously it would have been massive if Cross and Mills
did. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact that they did, I mean, that softens it quite a bit because Rubio was good last year. I mean, his season got kind of stunted because of, he had the early injury and he missed another game later on too. And he played 9 games and, but he only averaged 15 snaps in those games. 15 snaps isn't that hard to replace, you know, like that is something, even though he played well in those snaps and I thought he was a very good run defender. That's something that I think is easily replaceable if it comes to that, if he's not back. But I also think if, you know, for this spring, they got so many bodies there that it's probably to the benefit of a lot of guys that he's not going to be there because, who knows how much work they're going to give Cross and Mills, right? They shouldn't give them too much work, right? Yep. But Jason Anye, you know, obviously he's already kind of a guy who played last year and was like, in and out of the rotation, but someone who obviously is going to get, you know, a way better chance now, who he already kind of established himself with the twos. Donovan Hines, perfect example of a guy who gets a chance to really kind of elevate and kind of take that spot, really. And Hines looked good when he played. He's just small. And I think one of the things is that how big he is. I mean, first of all the Notre Dame, like the UND rosters, I would not get caught up in that because there's a lot that looks wrong to me, like in terms of it, judging by returning players, weight gain and weight loss. I'm like, this looks way like it just so up and down with so many of the guys or the exact number for some. And it's like, this just feels like they didn't really do this. They just kind of wanted to put it up for the early enrollees and kind of get it done. So I wouldn't, judge too much on that, but what he weighs, that's going to determine somewhat, but I really think he's like a kind of a Howard Cross type anyways. Right. That's the kind of player he is. Devin Houston, Armel Mukum, 2 guys who are going to get a ton of reps this spring. Great opportunity for them. Sean Seviano is a, early enrollee. I hope he's not the 339 or whatever he's listed. I hope he's a little bit slimmer than that, but he's going to get some opportunities and some reps this spring. And then I think Brandon Vernon, it depends because Vernon, he was repping at least a bit with inside in camp. And then when they played like in garbage time, he played a little bit inside and a little bit out. So I think we'll see there. And then there's always Tyson Ford too, right? Who I think right now it's totally up in the air of like what you're going to get out of Tyson Ford and where his fit is. But I mean, any kind of opportunity for him is like, he has to try to take advantage of it and see what happens there. So they don't lack for bodies. I really am excited about like guys like Houston and Mukum in particular, and to kind of see where they're at, because both those guys, I think with like a year into the strength conditioning program, that's going to be exciting to kind of see where they're at.
As you're listing players just now, I'm kind of thinking in my mind, like we've heard about, like Tyson Ford is an example of someone who it's like he was going to be a strong end, and then maybe he's going to be inside, then maybe he's going to be a strong end. And then Brandon Vernon, like, oh, he's going to definitely play inside. But then it's like his weight is such that it's like, well, maybe he's going to be a strong end, right? Armel Mukum, Jason Anye, kind of the same deal. And so I'm thinking like how.
Well, Mukum's definitely inside.
But he kind of fits in, like, they thought when he came in. It's and
or when they originally recruiting him. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me get to my point, because it's he may not apply specifically to this, but he's kind of in the, like, if he knows specifically what he's going to be, then that's fine. I just feel like there's, like, more than one player who's like, is he going to be a strong end, or is he going, like, how are they building up their body? Like, I feel like for the players that might be a little bit, I don't want to say confusing, just difficult, right? Like, to gain and lose weight, and you have to build up your body. It takes time. So is that, like, too, is there too much of that going on? Just as you're talking to me, I feel like that seems, that's happening a lot.
One, I think that's a great point, and I think it is a good thing to kind of specifically for those bigger bodies to focus in on that. But realize this is my speculation on it more than
for sure
what they're telling them, because I have a feeling that they have told, you know, Brandon Vernon, hey man, you're playing inside, or you're playing outside. Like, so I think they've defined that. I just don't know that they've defined that, or I haven't heard. And I haven't really asked about it, because it's not like a total pressing thing to kind of find out. We'll find out soon enough in March, you know, where he lines up. But I do think that, that's a great point, though. You don't want to serve two masters with it, because I think that it becomes a problem. It becomes a problem, especially when it talks – when you're talking about physical development and how much weight you should or shouldn't gain. And that's something too, especially because, you know, Lauren Landau, like, that's something that he needs to know.
Right.
He has to have a very good idea of, like, where, you know, these guys, where they want them to be, because they should all have goals of, like, this is where we're at, which was always, to me, the most frustrating thing with Michael Carmody. Because it was like, I mean, this guy, I was just like, this guy obviously just doesn't care, because if you're 280 pounds for 4 years or whatever, or you're losing 10 pounds as an offensive lineman, at that point, I'm like, wow, like, unless you have some kind of stomach deal or something that, you know, some kind of other health issue that's preventing that from happening. And, you know, I know that that wasn't the case with him. Then you really don't care that much about adding enough weight and adding enough strength and doing whatever. And that is just, I mean, it was critical when I played. It was critical when you played. It was critical years and years before, where that's just, you know, you, like, hey, we want you at 190 pounds. We want you at 220. We want you at 250, whatever, right? Like, and you want to be a good 250 or whatever, right? All these kind of things matter. And if you don't have, like, a concrete plan for that, then that's a problem. But I think one of the things of, like, when you get guys like, say, Vernon and Mukum. So to me, that's a perfect example of, like, kind of bringing it back to kind of when you brought up Mukum, because Mukum, I think that they thought, they're like, well, he's probably going to be, we'll see what happens with him. Right. And then he came in and he was like 280 pounds and, like, a pretty good 280. So they were like, well, he's going to play inside, you know, like, it's just, that's just, and he just kind of gained that naturally, wasn't really working that hard for it or whatever. And so I think that's just kind of like, with some guys, you want to take it, especially when those guys first come in, you want to say, hey, look, we don't want to force the issue of, like, where we want to do. We want you to find your best fit. But after you are a year into the program, or even just, like, even really a semester, really, that's part of the job of, like, the strength coach, the position coach, the head coach, whatever, like, of them determining, like, exactly where you're going to go. And it's like, it's just like anything. If, like, you say some guy's going to be a nickel, well, you have to learn certain things to play nickel as compared to playing outside corner. Right. And as much as that's, like, so there's mental stuff too. And a ton of, it's such a huge adjustment. Cause I was a guy, I played linebacker in high school and, you know, and then I was recruited as a defensive lineman. So they're going to be like, yeah, you're going to play defensive end, but I semester in, they're like, hey, by the way, you're moving to D tackle. So start hitting the protein shakes, right? Like it was just basically like I had to put on the weight, right? So that it's the sooner the better that you can kind of determine that. And I have a feeling that they probably already have an idea, but maybe that's the kind of thing where you lose Rubio and you don't know, and you have to plan. Maybe he comes back and there's obviously, you know, there's been plenty of guys who have come back and, you know, have been away from the program, been away from school and have come back, you know, Julius Jones, most famously, right. And obviously that worked out fantastic. Kavari Russell. I think Darren Walls was away from school for a bit and then came back too. Yeah. Those are just guys off the top of my head. I'm sure there's more, but there's also been guys, obviously guys who were out and that was it. So, but you kind of have to plan for that being it for him because you just never know. You can't assume anything because that's how you end up getting burned. So right. Maybe it's the kind of case where they might have told, Brandon Vernon in October, and I hate to just use him. He's like the guinea pig for this or whatever, but but maybe they told him in November or October, like, yeah, you're going to play in. Well, they might've got to January with this Rubio stuff. And they're like, hey, we want you to move inside. Cause we really think you can, this is your best chance to play next year. Right. So they might've done that. So it's going to be super interesting to kind of see where, how they fit there and where they kind of, if he is inside, where do they see all of these guys? Like, where do they see, like, is Houston above, he's above this guy. Is Mukum above Vernon? Like, you know, how do they start that? And obviously it's fluid and it can change and whatever. But a lot of that is from like how they did on scout team, how they look in the weight room, how they put time in the weight room. And that matters.
Yeah. So there's a lot to kind of take in there for the team and the players and everything. So hopefully that gets sorted. Right. And like you said, there's a ton of bodies that they have. There's a lot of guys that they have to choose from there, fortunately for them, with the loss of Rubio. So we'll have to monitor that situation. Last bit of news, Jim Harbaugh is off to the Chargers. He's been hired by the Chargers. So Michigan's into a new they're going to need a new head coach. Dan Adams asks, January 25th, 2025, over or under, Michigan has to forfeit their championship. What do you say? Over or under?
I would take – I guess the over, because I don't think they're going to have to forfeit it. It's just going to have it's going to have an asterisk forever. And my guess is what will happen now. I mean, with Harbaugh gone, that totally opens it up. They're going to be like, show cause penalty for Jim Harbaugh. He can't coach in the NCAA for 3 years or whatever is. And that's what will probably happen. The other thing that's interesting is I think what people really need to monitor is whether or not, so Sherrone Moore looks like, you know, the offensive coordinator and offensive line coach there is pretty much, I think it's a lock that he's going to be promoted to be the head coach there. What if he gets involved in that in terms of like, you know, what they're going to do with punishments there and stuff. And like, this guy can't recruit or whatever. Like if he got some kind of penalty there, that changes a lot. Or maybe they have to fire some people because obviously they fired Chris Partridge, right? Like during the thing, because he was trying to cover it up. You don't know what is going to happen in terms of how they're going to, what's going to play out with all that kind of stuff. But it'll be interesting. I mean, I've heard like a bunch of different things about how, basically other coaching staffs are circling and waiting for that stuff to happen. Cause they're like the guys that are in Michigan's class right now. And they're young guys that they have on the roster. They're like circling those guys and they're just waiting for it to happen. Not for them to go in the portal now, Sherrone Moore, but for all of a sudden coaches getting fired and all this chaos and who knows whatever maybe penalties they might have. And they're just waiting to see if they can steal some guys.
Yeah. As far as, like, I bet you what happens is they'll keep the championship because basically they stopped, they were caught. So they had to stop basically all their shenanigans, right? Well,
yeah.
So they got to play out the rest. So like the title was earned in a fair way, according to the NCAA. So what they'll probably do is they'll probably vacate. So like they'll probably have to be like, I don't know, they'll be like 6-0 or something. Like they'll be credited with 6-0. They'll keep their title. But like the previous three years or 2.5 or whatever, like that'll all be wiped out. That's what it's gonna be. And so it's really annoying to me, like. It just people don't talk. Like he was suspended twice. Like he was suspended two times last year.
Missed six games.
And it's just like where people are acting like,
just brush aside. Like, yeah, well, they won like those games. It's like no one is taking anything away from the guys who actually played the games and they played it. That's fine. Good for them. Like whatever. Right. Like those guys had to go out. You scrapped it up. You earned that part of it. Like, I mean. They don't just suspend people that six games. When is the last time that anyone has been suspended? I can't even think of another major head coach that it was had missed half the season in, you know, suspended for half the season. I can't even think of it. Like, off the top of your head, can you? Like, I can't think of another college football coach.
Yeah. I don't
know. I'm sure it happened back in the day or something, but I mean, not recently.
Yeah. So it's funny. I'm over it. If you get me going, I am not over it. But but like now, I don't want to talk about it. What we should get into is the rankings right now. Let's make the switch over to the rankings, Jamie. So basically, we'll just go all down the line, right? And we'll start with. Number one, I guess I'll just say mine and you can say yours. My number one ranked unit on the football team is quarterback. I think Riley Leonard is good, but it has as much to do with like Angeli and Minshew and Carr as anything else. I think all three of those guys and Minshew too, and Minshew is very much a projection because. We haven't seen him play in a game, and we've seen him a little bit, and it's not like he looked like any great shakes or anything like that. But I just think Minshew's going to be like a really good quarterback, and obviously we've seen what Angeli can do, and I think Riley Leonard with Mike Denbrock and all that the offense is going to be, I think they're all going to be like excellent studs, and so I just think it's the best unit on the roster, and. That's a pretty good unit to have number one. So, good. Let's. What do you say, Jamie?
I mean, I'm shocked that you put it number one. I mean, not that I don't think that it's very high. I do think it's should be high, because really, like, if you're talking about just going. Each individual, if all four of the guys are still on the roster in the thing, and I think people can agree, if Steve Angeli is your backup, that's a pretty high level backup, you know, that you're going to go in with. I think at the very least, it's like kind of going into the year, like a 2018 year where Ian Book was the backup, technically, right? It's the same kind of similar kind of feeling with that. And then you got Riley Leonard, who I would say is you feel better about than Brandon Wimbush going into 2018.
Yeah.
And then certainly depth wise, you know, like you feel pretty good. Like you said about Minshew and Carr, like just about maybe want, you know, Minshew maybe even being elevating and possibly even being the best of the group later on. And I like it. It's bold, I think, you know, because I certainly, it was not the top of my list, but I love it.
What's the top?
Well, mine is, okay. So I wanted to ask you this though. Do we lump DB in together or do we keep it corner and safety?
I separated it, but if you want, we can lump it.
No, we can separate it. So mine is corner.
Okay.
And one, because I mean, I think, you know, you lose Cam Hart. Obviously, Cam Hart's a very good player. Not saying anything there, but I think Ben Morrison is absolutely, you know, undeniably one of the top corners in the country, should be a preseason All-American. Anyone who doesn't have him preseason All-American list hasn't watched him, hasn't really studied him at all, because he deserves to be, especially how he's matched up against the top guys. Like, he certainly never had a game. Like, I know it's very trendy to put Travis Hunter there. He is extremely talented. Nothing against Travis Hunter, but he got cooked by Alec Iomanner. He got cooked.
Yeah.
And Ben Morrison, no one even came close to cooking him. He was locking guys down. He would, like, ask Marvin Harrison. Like, Marvin Harrison Jr. smoking everybody except Ben Morrison, basically.
Right,
like,
right.
So, I mean, because even, like, Will Johnson did not do as well. And he's a very good player, too. He's the other guy who's you know, considering, like, an All-American. So, I just think off of the strength of Ben Morrison, plus, you know, you mentioned Mickey before. I think Mickey is a really good player. Like, at the very least, he's a guy who you would say, man, this guy's a no-doubt starter and, like, a pretty solid player as a field corner on most Notre Dame teams. He might not even start. Christian Gray might beat him out. And Christian Gray might be the next Ben Morrison. I really am super, super high on Christian Gray and can't wait to watch him in the spring and the summer and to see where he's at. And I just think, you know, if we're going to talk about, if you add in, say, like, Jordan Clark as, like, a nickel that you kind of brought in too, and his, like, experience there and his ability to play man coverage and play it at a high level that he did in 2022. And then we're talking about, like, I'm excited about the young talent. Who's to say that Leonard Moore or, you know, Micah Bell or Carson Hobbs, that either those three might not be a guy that we're talking about saying, like, man, I don't know how they're going to keep this guy off the field. Like,
yeah.
I really, really like the corner room and the talent they have. And obviously they have one of the top coaches in the country coaching that position too. So that's why they're my number one. And I really think, like, the defense will be as good as it will be because of the corner.
Yeah. So I have corners too. So I'm with you basically on all this. I think I feel a little bit higher about Riley Leonard than maybe most people. Right. And so I like, plus, like, it's hard for me to, like, if I think the quarterback is really good, then it's hard for me not to put them on top, because it's such an important position, right? Like, the quarterback is involved in every single offensive play, where corners, they're involved, but they may not have, like, the biggest role, right? You know, on a play-to-play basis, essentially. So that's why. So it's I have corners too. I agree with all that. I am a little bit, like, I don't feel as strongly about Mickey as you. And, like, Christian Gray, I'm it's like, I don't even want to say I talk bad about him. It's just that, like, we haven't seen it on a regular basis. It's basically it, right? We've seen it a little bit, and I'm super high on him. Like, if you ask me to gauge it, I would say he's going to be, like, really good this year. I kind of lumped Jordan Clark in with the safeties. And so I have safety at number three too, by the way. That's why I was saying, like, if we combine the two, like, secondary, then I'll put secondary.
I would put DBs one. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's why I was kind of like, I didn't do that, but I have corners two, safeties three. And it just, because, like, I think the Rod Hurd thing is a pretty big deal for this roster. Xavier Watts is obviously a huge deal. He's going to be a captain on this team.
He's a pretty good player.
reigning defensive player of the year, which is good. I read that somewhere. It's very smart analytic on my part. So there's that. I think, and then like, I think a Don Shuler has something there. I think Luke Tolich, he's hurt, but like, I think he could be like a sneaky good player. Ben Minich is coming back, right? Like he's kind of a forgotten player. So they have a lot of options there. And I think with Hurd, and like, I think Hurd will be an upgrade over DJ Brown and Ramon Henderson. Maybe not like the two of them combined or whatever, but just like, I think he would be a better, I think he would start over them if they were all on the roster.
In my opinion, yes. Yeah.
Right. So that kind of bumps that up as well. So that's kind of what I have. So I have quarterback, corner, safety. What do you have 2-3 on your board?
So I had safety third as well too. Okay. Right. So if we're going to split that up, and I had defensive line second.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, I have them four, but let's.
So quarterbacks were my four.
All right.
I have defensive line second, and really, you know, as you can tell, like I don't want to diminish Gabriel Rubio because I said I think he was a very good player last year, and I actually think could be a starting caliber player if he had to be this year. But I think it was really all about like I think. Cross and Mills inside, fantastic. Like, I just think automatically those guys did so much for the defense last year, were great. Cross was just a difference maker throughout the year and on third down as a interior pass rusher too. I think the addition of RJ Oben, I think is immediately you would think, wow, oh man, I don't know how they're going to place JJB. I really think Oben can be that same type of player. Mm. Maybe even better. Like it's on the table that he could be better, right? So I think right there you have that going across. Plus, I think they're going to be way better at Viper this year. I do think because it's either Botello gets healthy and he is going to be closer to the player we thought he could be in 2023. You got Josh Burnham there as well, who I think is going to continue to ascend. You know, I'm not sold on Junior Tuihalamaka as a pass rusher. I just haven't seen it from him. I do think he's a solid player versus the run, but I think Boubacar Traore is going to play. He is going to be in on third down this year, and I think he is going to wreak havoc. I think he has a sky-high ceiling as a pass rusher, so I think they're going to be better rushing off the edge this year. Mm. Plus, I do think that there's, you know, other possibilities. Like, I'm not counting out, like, Kahanu Kia, like, being somebody who really helps them out. Like, I do think that is a possibility there too. I also think that Burnham, I think, could maybe play both sides depending how big he is in the fall, but he could be someone who plays both strong and Viper. And if you kind of slide him over too, you know, you become deeper because you have all those options at Viper. Plus, I really think if Aiden Golbera is healthy, I was super high on what Aiden Golbera was going to be as a player last year. If he didn't tear his, like, he literally tore his ACL right on a sack play in practice. It was like a very impressive play. So I do think that, you know, all these things, plus I think Bryce Young might be somebody who is just like, this guy's too much of a freak show. He might just have to be in the rotation. So I think when you add that kind of into it, I think the defensive line, which was really good last year, I think it has a chance to be better this year. So that's why they're my number two.
Yeah. So I had them four. I think the thing that it's kind of the wild card there to me is like when I think about them, I wonder like what the top line of them is. You know what I mean? Like, so like Riley Leonard, right? Like his Heisman odds are like 20 to 1, 22 to 1. I'm gonna have to get Christian on this because he's a degenerate who cheers for Michigan players.
He'll tell you when the line moves on Leonard.
He's a degenerate who cheers for Michigan players because he's betting on them. Like, yeah. Unacceptable. But like, I think 22-1 or like 20. I think that's sneaky, pretty good odds. Like I don't gamble, but like I looked at that and I thought you got to be careful with that, right? And so I think like I think he has a very high ceiling. Obviously, Ben Morrison, like first round pick type, Xavier Watts, defensive player of the year. Like, I don't know what the high ceiling for the defensive line is. Now, I do think with Burnham and I do think with Boubacar, like it could be there, right? There is like top line ceiling right there. And so, but like to me, it's a little too projecty for me to just be like put them over those other two groups. It's like the top line. And I think like D line at four for me is like a super like it's a pretty good group to have at four. You know what I mean? Like usually like we would be a lot lower. So it kind of makes me feel good about
the fact that you have like they aren't in the next tier, they're in the same tier, they're just ranked below.
Who was your five?
My five was running backs.
Okay, same.
Yeah, and I thought about tight end too, but we'll get into that as well. But I just think the backs, I mean, I'm super, super high on Jeremiah Love and the player he's going to be. And I really don't think we've seen anything close to what he is going to be, you know, because he's only going to get bigger and stronger. And he has more in him in terms of grit and being able to run through contact and also I think so many people assumed he was this track guy, and he's just a track guy because he is a track guy. He's fast.
Yeah.
He's super fast, right? But I think because someone's super fast or they run like a sub 4.440, it's like I don't view him as like Chris Johnson. Right. I mean, obviously Chris Johnson ran a 4.2, but he was just like straight speed, and this is what he is. And that was obviously special. So I still think Love still has a chance. Once this guy gets into the open field more, people are going to see that speed more. But I think he has like all these other number one back qualities. You can see like the footwork and the vision and the ability to gain yards after contact, that I think is going to kind of separate him. Plus, JD Price came off of a friggin' Achilles injury and looked dang good. Looked dang good and was, especially in the bowl game, was awesome. I mean, I think right there, to me, if I'm looking at them, say, compared to Diggs and Estime as sophomores, kind of like that 2022 running back group with those two, I would take Love and Price over them in terms of like ceiling and what they can be. And obviously, you know, SMA is amazing and was great. Right. But I'm just saying, like, if I'm going to take both of those guys and what they can be in like terms of big play ability and all that too, in that year for 2022, I would take Love and Price hands down. Plus I mean, I think Aeneas Williams might be someone that can kind of help out in some ways. He might be good enough to be like, wow, this guy found a role here, catching the football or doing something like that. I think Kedron Young is like not that far away from being a dude. Like, he's a big, big guy, and I'm excited about him. And then it is weird to just be like, because Jabron Payne and how he was used, I think he kind of gets taken down a notch. But I don't think he's a bad player. Like, I think he's a pretty good player. And he's still young, right? So I think there's opportunity for him to be better. I think even Ford, too, is at the very least, like, if this guy is your like fifth back or whatever, like sixth back or whatever he is, he can play and help you out. Like he's a good guy to have in the room as well. So I love that running back room. Will one of those guys reach the kind of high highs of estimate this year? I don't know. I don't know that for sure, but I think overall depth wise, this group is as good as Notre Dame has had in a while when you're just talking about like 1-6 or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. The hard thing for Payne is you look at him in a vacuum. It's like, he's a pretty good player. He's, you know, you give him the ball, it's fine. Right. The problem is that whenever he gets the ball, you always think, well, why don't you just give it to Price or why don't you just give it to Love? You know, like you're just giving them the ball. Like the problem is like his work comes at the expense of these other guys who you want to be more involved. And so that's why people like downgrade him in their minds. I got a hot take about Jeremiah Love. I think that in camp, when McCullough was talking about like, he wants to know who's about it, right? Like who's about it? Who's about being a running back? You know, you got to be able to stick your nose in. I think that Jeremiah Love took that too far. It's like, I feel like every run was like, I want to be about it. I will show you that like I
will. Trying to run angry all the time.
Yeah. Like I thought it was too much, which I didn't think it was like quote unquote a problem at all. And I think there was enough there to say like, okay, like this is going to be a really good player. Like everything that you said about him, I agree with. I just thought last year, it's like, it's too much, man. Like just
pick your spots.
Yeah. Like it doesn't, you don't have to be like 100,000%. I'm running with my hair on fire every single time. Right.
Yeah.
And even Estime wasn't like that. Right. Like it just, you know, Kyren wasn't like that.
That's a great point.
I do think Kudrin Young is going to feature next year in some way. I think he's ready to go. I think he's good. So I had them at 5. Same as you, and like kind of everything you said, I'm on board with. 6, go. Where are you at?
So I had tight ends next, right. And I mean, obviously, I think of Mitchell Evans. If I kind of knew that he was going to be back like week one and totally healthy and all that kind of stuff, maybe I'd bump them up even a couple spots, maybe, because I really think that like Mitchell Evans could. You know, he could be a Mackey Award winner next year if he plays all the games and all that. Like, he could have that kind of impact. He was great this year. Like, he was great catching the ball. Did some things that I don't think a lot of people thought he could do. And I always was confident in, because I saw him as a runner when he was a quarterback in high school, that, like, oh, this guy can do some stuff after the catch with given opportunities. I just didn't know the ball skills were that good. And he made some very, very impressive catches. And just a lot of things were like, these were not good throws by Sam Hartman, where like he's picking it off his shoelaces, obviously making one-handed catch and trap. Like a lot of that stuff, right, were difficult catches that he made look routine. And so, and he's like a, you know, at the very least, like a solid blocker to a very good blocker. It's just, what's his health like? I do think Eli Raridan is going to take a bigger jump after, you know, having hopefully a healthy year. And Flanagan too is, I mean, that's an exciting top three right there. And, you know, Davis Sherwood too, as like a guy who's just going to, you know, obviously fit a specific role. I mean, he can help. He can help your team. And then I mean, I don't expect a lot out of Jack Larson this year. I sincerely doubt there's going to be a big impact from him. I think this is very much going to be a year of physical development and learning for him. And it's impossible to say if Kevin Bauman will even be playing. Like I'm almost surprised that we haven't heard that he took a medical or whatever, because you just, you know, I mean, he's had so many injuries. Yeah. In saying that, I mean, Sean Crawford's a perfect example of like, man, that guy could have taken a medical probably like three times during his career and didn't, and always somehow it came back and he finished and finished pretty strong. So, I mean, maybe Bauman will play. Maybe he'll play and help them out. Certainly he's better than a lot of guys that you would think, you know, just that people haven't seen him. I've seen him have like dominant practices where you would have guessed it was Michael Mayer making catches like that, right? So I mean, I'm high in the position. It's just health and depth there because of the health. That's why it's down. And I mean, certainly if like Holden Stays was there, you'd feel like a little bit better about it. But even then, I really think that there is a possibility that like Raridan and Flanagan could have played over him anyways. Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but I mean, certainly they have, no surprise, a bunch of NFL dudes there.
Yeah. I also had tight ends at six. I do wonder where your seventh is. I want to get to this question though, from Robert Halicki, a little bit off. Rank uniform alternatives from the all whites and all greens this year. No limit on jersey and pants. What say you? I like the green with white from a post I saw today. Do you? So a lot of the players who were on campus this last weekend for Junior Day, they featured in white top, green pants. Oh no, I'm sorry. Green top, white pants. Where are you at with that? Do you like that?
Nah, I'm not a big fan of that, to be honest. I like it the icy all white. I'm a icy all white. Like, I love that. I think that is just, I don't know. There's something about that. Like, I just have always liked that. It like from when back when I played, when you're wearing like all whites, there's just something about it because you just don't see it often. So like when we had it, like, and when I was at Idaho State and we had like the all whites because we got white pants and everyone was like, oh God, get rid of these black pants. And we're like, whew, you just feeling fresh up there. You feel fast or something, right? Like, and so those are always my number ones at alternatives. But I'm also just like, you just can't beat the classics. You can't beat the classic, you know, blue and gold.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can't beat the classics. And also, like, I do think – so it's hard because – you don't want to get away too much from Notre Dame, but like, so I think white tops, green pants could be kind of fire on the road. It could, but it's almost like now you're getting into like Michigan State territory, you know, and you're getting a little too close to other schools. Like, you do want to be unique. That's the only thing about it. That I'm kind of out on as in, like, so in a vacuum, I think these things look good. White on white is nice. When I played, we had white on white on the road. And sometimes we would go white top, black pants. And I like that as well, but white on white is pretty flashy. So, I mean, it's like a perfect off season conversation to have. Like, whatever, wear whatever. Like, when the game comes, whatever's fine. Like for the Clemson game, like, fine, white on white. Like, please win. That's all it is. It's like, please play well, and we can have a good conversation about it afterwards instead of a bad one. But like, the good thing I think is like, it does look good in the photos for like the recruit stuff. Like, I think as a recruiting tool, the alternates are almost better than
an actual. It is better, yeah.
Like,
it
is so better, like, for sure. As a recruiting tool, right? And so that's what
people – it's why Oregon has always got – because they just like, hey, pick whatever one you want, man. There's like 40 different flavors you could get, right?
Yeah, so it's good. Like, the guys, they want to look good in photos. And everyone wants to look good in photos, Jamie. And that's why you want – if you're going to take a photo, you want to pick a media company that's going to – do a good job for you, and what you can do is you can, if you need a photo or you want to look good in something, then you can hit VSR Media, which is founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrazadeh. VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and a photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media specializes in short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior sports photos, just what we are talking about. Contact them at vsrmediacompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. All right, Jamie, number seven on your list. We haven't done O-line, which is in itself a concern. Haven't done O-line. Haven't done wide receivers. And we haven't done linebackers. Who is number seven for you?
Linebackers was seventh for me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. Linebackers were seven for me. But it was, to me, it could have been receivers or linebackers. You know, and I mean, you can guess that I had O-line last. But it's just because it's the most uncertain position. Really, and you know, and we'll get into that, but I just think linebackers, to me, now this is where you separate and you're like, there's a little bit more questions about these positions. And I, you know what, I would know, I'll still put linebackers ahead of receivers, but I just think that, you know, you got Kaiser back. You know, so you're going to have a baseline there with that guy who has played like a lot of football for Notre Dame. And he's the very least going to be a solid player for Notre Dame. And it's just kind of working out the young talent and who is going to be like, there's not a lot of guys who start, you know, as like freshmen or sophomores at linebacker, you know. And if they do, you're typically great. You know, you're typically a great player. So if Drake Bowen wins the job, some of it is like, well, they don't have maybe some of those upperclassmen, but it's like some of it is just like, man, this guy is going to be pretty darn good, right? Yeah. And I do think that all here is good stuff about him. So I'm really excited. Really excited to kind of see where he's at. But I mean, I just don't know like what you're going to get out of like Jalen Snead. Like Jalen Snead could be like the guy in spring to be like, wow, Jalen Snead has made this. It just clicked. Yeah. And this is the jump. And he is going to be this type of player. And obviously he's going to play a role in sub packages and probably be much better than he was last year at that too. So there's that. And then, I mean, I'm not counting out that like KVA or Jaden Osbury or even Preston Zinner is like a totally forgotten guy in all of this too. And I mean, I wouldn't expect anything out of the other freshman linebackers outside of KVA. But I would throw KVA in with Osbury and Zinter. Yeah. And yes, I'm not considering like – I'm not like Preston Zinter, watch out for him. I don't know. But I don't think people should just write him off as anything because he was a guy who was numerous times like it is something when someone wins Scout Team Player of the Week numerous times. It's like that means the coaches notice you.
Yeah.
They're noticing you for the right reasons.
Right.
Right. So I think that I'm kind of excited to kind of see, you know, where it goes and how they're going to be there and how that's going to shape the defense. And I really like the talent. It's just who's going to kind of rise to the top and how many guys are going to play. Right. Because you could say, I don't know if like maybe Bowen and Kaiser are the starters, but maybe it's going to be like a big split between like four guys and it'll be like Snead and Osbury or Snead and Zinter or whatever. Right. Or KVA like, and KVA might also be someone who could play on third down as well too. So I don't know. I'm excited to see where it goes. And I think it'll be very interesting because I don't imagine before the season that I'm going to have the linebackers much higher than I do now. But I wouldn't be also surprised after the season if like you listed linebackers in like the top four position groups. Yeah. Cause I think, you know, that's a possibility with this talent.
Right. And like, they're very difficult because like you said, there's only two. And so, and there are questions about really all of them. Like Kaiser's a proven player, but he's not proven like at the position he's going to be playing all the time, really. So we haven't seen that. So there's questions at both positions there. And there's also like there's sub packages that they'll use that we don't know about, right? So we don't know the utility truly of Jalen Snead yet, or Osbury or Bowen or Zinter, right? And on and on, right? KVA, we don't know that. So I had the linebackers at 8. I had wide receivers at 7. Frankly, I kicked around the idea of putting the wide receivers at 6 ahead of the tight ends, but then I thought, no, like Mitchell Evans will come back and he'll be it. That would be just being like wish casting more than anything else. But I like the wide receiver group. I do. I think with Greathouse, with Thomas, and with Faison, like those are three guys. It's like, hey, all of them, we've seen them make plays before. Bo Collins and Chris Mitchell. The thing about the wide receivers that makes it hard is Chris Mitchell is a lot more projecty. Like I kind of talked about with the DNs, right? He's a lot more projecty than you would kind of want coming from FIU, right? Like conceptually, perfect fit. Love where he fits in with the team. But it's like, it's also FIU, like it is a jump in play and in caliber of opponent. So that has to be taken into account. And also like the Caleb Smith thing from last year kind of lingers in my mind. Like can't just assume, right?
You can't put it in pen.
Yeah.
You can't put it in pen.
But with the freshmen too, like I feel like between Micah Gilbert, Cam Williams and Saldate, one of those guys is going to make some kind of an impact, right? I don't know which one it'll be. We got to get some intel on that. But like as the 7th, right? And even an 8th, like 7-8, like as much as I feel like the wide receiver situation has improved, right? And I feel like there's so many good options at linebacker, like as a 7-8, man, that's a good 7-8, right? Like going back like other years, like that's a really good group to have at 7-8. Obviously last for both of us is offensive line. This is like the biggest red flag on the team. And what they can be in 2024 to have the O-line this low. It's kind of similar, I guess, to linebacker and that like, you know, the options, but like, is it going to fit? And it's such an important unit, you know, and the fact that the two tackles are up in the air, it's just, it's chilling, right? So what's your assessment of the O-line? We both had them 9.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's reason to be optimistic because you should always be optimistic about Notre Dame's offensive line because of the way they recruit. It's just they have landed enough guys that these guys should develop into a good group. And the thing is like, what is a good group? Are we talking a good group for Notre Dame or just a good group period? Because it's like Pitt can say hey, we got a pretty good offensive line this year. Well, that's not a good Notre Dame offensive line. You know, like there's a difference there. And Notre Dame's, you know, it's not about like how Notre Dame looks against the average teams. It's about, you know, can you run the ball when, you know, can you move people? Can you do things? Can you protect when you're playing these top teams? Right. When you're stepping into against Texas A&M, they've lost a lot of people. They still got some dudes on the O-line, right? They still got the dudes on the O-line. And I would agree with Blayberg. Notre Dame is not O-line U. They're not. They haven't produced enough consistently guys to do it. But in saying that, Notre Dame for like over a decade, basically since like Zach Martin and Chris Watt have played together, they have been, they've had at least two future NFL guys start for them. They've had that. So do they have that this year? They probably do. Maybe even they have more than that, right? But how close are they to, you know, are they 2018 Notre Dame's offensive line, which had obviously a lot of young guys, and it was like people kind of thought like, oh, it should be fine when they kind of like transition to you know, this group when they have like Eichenberg and you know, Eichenberg at tackle and Hainsey at one tackle, and then Kramer, and you know, they had Bars and Sam Mustafer, or they had them inside, but then obviously when Bars went down, and then it was, you know, Banks, and obviously there's a lot of good players there, but that line wasn't great that year. They weren't, right? And they got to all of a sudden when they all of a sudden you got into the they were better in 2019. They were beat up at the end of the year, and then they were really good in 2020, right? Where then they were like a finalist. So a Joe Moore Award finalist. Where are they going to be this year? And is it going to be like, it can't be like 2021, because 2021, that was a bad line for most of the year. And it really, even at the end of the year, it was just like, that was like, hey, Pitt line. Like, no one wants a Pitt line. No one wants that level of a line. And I know Pitt's just catching shots here, but like, it's just true. Like, I'm just talking about like a middle of the road, you know, Power Five program. That's not what Notre Dame should be on the offensive line. So, So I think, so it really matters. Like, it matters that Charles Jagusa is not just a guy who, like, you're like, oh, this guy's going to be a future star. It's like, you start to see that right away. You start to see like how Joe Alt, you saw that in that freshman season. You're like, oh, he's not perfect, but you're like, man, this guy is on his way. So that's got to happen at left tackle there. And whoever it is at right tackle, like, so let's just say Tosh Baker is the right tackle. It's like, well, is he Josh Lugg in 2021? Because that's not the standard that you kind of want to have. So it's like, can Emil Wagner kind of win that job? Could somebody else step up there? And then inside, they weren't good enough inside last year. Yeah. They just weren't. And that's a thing where I do think like Ashton Craig and Billy Shrouth, I'm excited about what those guys can be. And I think they're ascending players. But you got to work out, like, obviously Rocco Spindler's got to get healthy and stuff too. But it's like, are those two going to be fixtures? Is the other one going to be Rocco Spindler? Pat Coogan started every game last year. I just didn't think he was very good. You know, he was just kind of average and really struggled in some of the games against the better, you know, defensive tackles that he had to face. So is maybe that's, you know, that was his first year starting, and then he takes another leap, right? But is that who he is? Like, we have to see all these things, and there's just a lot of questions there. And I mean, I don't think that even like people might say, well, Gerby Lambert, maybe he's going to be like, I think Gerby Lambert's super talented, but I don't know if he's going to be. And first of all, he's coming in the summer, so we won't know until, you know, August or whatever, until where he's at. And then, you know, where is he going to be? If they're like, oh, Gerby Lambert is, we need Gerby Lambert to start, that means that they didn't have a good spring with the tackles there too. So I don't know. I mean, it's, to me, it's a very big, the one good thing, this is the first year in a while that they've had the same offensive line coach back to back year. So, you know, Joe Rudolph is, these are his guys now, right? All these guys, they've coming back, they've had the year working with him, and now you get to kind of see where these guys are at coming into next year.
Bladeberg just made a really good point that I was going to make about the O-line U thing. I mean, even aside from like their ability to put players in the NFL and for those players to be successful in the NFL, like you also got to be like dominant all the time in college football. And Notre Dame is not, right? They haven't been. They've been dominant as compared to most universities, right? And that's what Jamie's getting at, where it's like the Notre Dame O-line will be good. They're not going to be a total dumpster fire. But no, that's in comparison to that's in comparison to other universities, right? Yeah. Not like top of the sport. So I think that's a good point by Blake Burke there.
And sorry to just interrupt too, but you know, there's people arguing because I know people, whatever. If there's Notre Dame fans in here, everybody, no one wants to give Michigan credit. No one wants to give them any credit for anything. I mean, their offensive line has just been flat out better than Notre Dame's offensive line for, you know, X amount of years in a row now. Yeah. And they've been one of the top groups, I think. I mean, they won the Joe Moore Award back-to-back years, and they were a finalist, I think, again this year. You know, Notre Dame hasn't done that. They haven't done that. And I don't know what O-line you means in terms of, it's like, if we're just picking like, well, this guy's this and this guy's, you know, Zach Martin's an all-pro and Ronnie Stanley made an all-pro and Quentin Nelson, whatever. It's like, well, at some point it's got to be the next guys, right? You know, and Hainsey looks pretty good at center for Tampa Bay, whatever. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that if you're doing that and you're putting out, it's a good thing. Notre Dame is always going to be, I would put them top five offensive line programs in the country year in, year out, no doubt. But I don't think it's an there's no argument that they're one. You wouldn't put them above, no one would put them above Michigan, Georgia, Alabama. You just wouldn't. You couldn't, if you're being objective about it, you couldn't say that as a unit. You could say Joe Alt is a better player than any of those other guys, but you can't say that, you know, they're as a unit that those groups weren't better than Notre Dame's. It's just a fact.
Yeah. Everything you said, and the thing is like everything we said about the tackles is like that also assumes that the interior is going to be a strength, and we don't know that, right? So it's like you said, there's just a ton of questions for the O-line this year, and so that's why they're ninth, which is interesting, right? And I don't feel like I'll bet you they don't finish ninth, right? And if they do,
that would be not great.
So that's where it's at. Those are our rankings for the day. We're going to end it there. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back on Tuesday, perhaps with a guest. We'll see. Might have something new on Tuesday with a guest. But either way, we're going to be back here on Tuesday. So have a good weekend, everyone. Hit the like, hit subscribe, hit the notification bell sooner ever it is. We are going live. Links to the podcast are in the description below. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the football games. And go Kyle Hamilton. Go Ravens. We'll talk to you on Tuesday. Keep hitting and hustling.